Off top, I would like to read you guys a tweet from what appears to be a lovely young lady. She tweeted, at Foxworth Show, discovered this show yesterday, listened to a few episodes on the treadmill, and then found out about Charlie Kravitz. So now, I only watch on YouTube for reasons. Play the music.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
Welcome to the Dominique Foxworth Show. I'm joined, as I always am, by my producer and co-host, Snack Harlow, Snack McClung, Charlie Kravitz. What's up, Snack?
Is that why you dress like me today? Down to the socks?
I'm trying to steal some of your glow up. I want people to tune in to see my good looks.
We don't want to be the best, and this is sort of giving me the ick. So should we do some sports?
Yeah, we can do some sports. I had to start off with a nice, pleasant complimentary way to start the show, because I yelled at you this morning because you were infuriating me. And it's not just you. You were a stand-in for a bunch of other people who were infuriating me. And it was people complaining. It's like fans and sports media personalities complaining about the NBA All-Star game. I'm so sick of it. Stop it. It's almost like they don't have a mirror and they don't recognize that in part the game has changed and it's gotten less competitive and it's not fun because of them. Like, the players are reacting in a situation that seems pretty reasonable to me because of the proliferation of sports media and social media and our culture generally in sports, counting rings. No one in sports reveres the guy who plays hard in All-Star game. They get mocked. We revere the guy who wins championships. And that's just, it's all the way down through the lower ranks of basketball. I spent this weekend at basketball practice for my son. And one of his teammates has an older brother who's like 13, pretty good basketball player. So I played basketball with him the whole time. Game to business.
This is what you set up this whole thing to say that you locked up a 13-year-old in one-on-one.
Gave him the blues. Hopefully he got better. But no, my point is, being around it, and it's something that I think has been in the air in the way that I view sports, is the professionalization of youth sports. And I think all of this feeds into the current culture in pro sports. And I think more than anything, I agree with the fans and I agree with the media personalities who like lament how boring the All-Star game is. I didn't watch it either. I wasn't interested in it. It's not exciting or interesting. I understand that. But to me, it feels like complaining about a problem that you caused and you're not looking in the mirror and realizing that it's a natural outgrowth of the culture that we've celebrated and the culture that we've encouraged. And now when this happens, I think I would understand if there was one or two guys on the floor who just weren't playing hard. Then I would say something's wrong with those two guys. It's annoying. And this is generally not just in this, just around the world in general, it's sometimes annoying. And maybe this is part of my 40-year-old, like, I have a better view on the world. It seems interesting, or it seems obvious to me, when there is something that's affecting an entire population, that it is about the system, not the people. And I think that's why I get annoyed, is because people who help to create the system look up and see how the players are reacting inside the system, and then yell at them for being them, for saying that they are, or they yell at them and say that they are like uniquely selfish, like there's different versions of people. No, they are normal people who are behaving, well, they're superhuman in some way, but like, in their brains, they are normal people reacting to reasonable incentives.
I think, okay, if first of all, would you say you played harder against that 13-year-old than anyone played in the All-Star game?
Oh, 100%.
Okay.
100%. Oh, I gave him a couple shots because I wanted to keep him interested, but it was an hour and a half, and I had to make sure that it was clear that I still had it.
Dominique once played one of our former producers in one-on-one, and the guy said that he could guaranteed he would be able to score on Dominique. That was not the case.
He's tall, too.
Poor Ozzie.
Because he was just so disrespectful.
I saw him after that. And he was a broken man.
He was so disrespectful. Like, I don't know.
Strategy-wise, you just got to go step back and huck threes.
Yeah. But the point that I made to him, to Ozzie, and that the young 13-year-old had to learn was, you will not get a good shot. You're not going to get a good shot. It's just not going to happen. Like, you're not faster than me. You're not quicker than me. You can't jump higher than me. You're not going to get a good shot. And Ozzie didn't get any good shots, so he lost 11-0.
Sounds a lot like Paul George and Damian Lillard. All depends what a good shot is. So I want to get back to the All-Star game, and I want to separate it into things as we were going on that stuff.
You gave us too. It's normally not. Yeah, I'm normally now a football player playing basketball, but that
now,
James.
Now we're just lying.
Okay, whatever.
I mean, defensive back, not a wide receiver for a reason. So if you're going to tell me that the All-Star game was bad and that it's the system's fault, not the player's fault, I'm not going to totally disagree with you. I do think that these guys are stars who should care about the well-being of the league and marquee products, just because that's how the league continues to get bigger and improve. But I do think the bigger story here is the All-Star game is a symptom of what's going wrong sort of in the NBA. First of all, I miss football so much. I miss football so much. Like, I can't believe we're a week after the football season and we're now discussing whether or not guys tried hard enough in the NBA All-Star game. But where I fall on this is the system, the NBA, the rules, the way it's officiated has gone so much towards offense, so much towards allowing guys to score. And the guys have gotten so much better at making shots. They score from everywhere. But it is a problem with the entertainment product. The games are less entertaining in the current NBA than they should be with the players being this great. How does that apply to the All-Star game?
So I think you're right. Part of that is analytics in part. Like, analytics in football does not tell you the right way to play. Like, it does not, like, when you go into a football game, you can see multiple types of defenses having success and different types of offenses having success. I think in the current NBA, we've seen some teams diverge from the formula, but the last 10 years or so, it felt like every team was trying to play the same way. And that, I think, is still connected to the challenge or the push and pull of entertainment versus winning. And pro sports, I think pro sports teams and pro sports leagues have a challenging, like, dual motive, where to be a pro sports league, you want the product to be entertaining.
Yeah.
You also want it to be, like, have integrity, and that, like, those things are at odds. And yeah, for a specific team, it's even more obvious where you want to make money, but you want to win. And if it's been proven through the addition of three-point line that you get a better chance of winning by playing this way, then it seems dumb. And then that also ties back into, like, load management and how aggressively you play an All-Star game, because, and then that also ties all the way back to the original point that I was making, is, like, the way the system exists, which inside the system also exists fans and sports media people who establish the priorities for the league. And the players respond to those priorities.
I kind of think ring culture only matters for the top of the top players. Like, no one thinks that Chris Middleton is a markedly more impressive player than someone like Jaylen Brown. Like, when you're in, it's like a select 6 to 8 guys. And here's I want to go specifically through the All-Star game.
Hold on. Before you go to that, I would say that I agree with you, except for the fact is those top players set the culture.
Definitely.
You can't be Chris Middleton out there going hard in, well, he wasn't in the All-Star game.
That would have been awesome.
Going hard in the All-Star game while the top of the league is setting the culture for the league. And if you are Giannis, and
counterpoint, Karl Towns was that in the All-Star game.
Exactly.
He got in his bag. He's like, we're gonna score 40. We'll be down by 20. This is my moment.
You're making my point. And who came in here and got on a TV or wrote a tweet the next day like, man, sure wish the league was full of cats? Nobody. because you make fun of that guy.
I know what I must do, brother.
Yeah, because he's the outlier. But I think even with Chris Middleton and thinking back on Giannis, if Chris Middleton is not optimizing his body to be prepared for the playoff run in the finals, Giannis will have words for him because Giannis's legacy is dependent on that. So I'm sorry to, I know you're going build into a bigger point, but I think it's important to understand that even though it only matters for the guys who are going to be ranking when it's all over, it influences everybody.
So my larger point where I think we disagree, the system has, and by the system, I mean the league, the officials have prioritized things that have made the game slightly more monotonous, slightly less fun in the regular season. There are too many games. We know this. It's 65 game rule, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I do think that the onus on fixing those things is on court performance, and the league can't fix that with the players. There is a personal responsibility that, like, we need to make a product that's good enough. You need to care about the next generation of players and the health of the league, because that's what's going to lead to the media deals. That's what's going to lead to the guys getting paid more. And I do think that there's a bubble in that. Like, everything, like, this has been talked about on other podcasts.
Right.
Simmons brought this up. Why are the ratings going up for everything but the NBA? And the NBA would, their counterpoint would be like, we're getting more digital impressions. We crush on YouTube, et cetera, et cetera. But it's created a bunch of NBA fans who care more about the drama than the game. And then they tune in on a cold night in February and they're like, oh, these guys aren't playing. These guys aren't playing hard. It's exemplified in the All-Star game. And then if you want to talk about incentives, that's been brought up. And let's roll through a couple of these.
Hold on. Can we address the first one first?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you constructed, you posed this as you disagreeing with me, but ultimately still got to the same point.
Well, no, I just also blame the players.
Well, I mean, you clearly said that the NBA itself is prioritizing this soap opera and this social engagement. So why, when the top decision makers are clearly sending a message to the employees that this matters more than that, then why would we then go to the players and say, hey, but you got to have some personal pride. You got to pull the NBA up by its bootstraps, personal responsibility. Like, that to me seems absurd. Yeah,
this is gaslighting.
How's the gaslighting? You just said it. Okay, never mind. We'll count that as a gaslight. What's the next one?
Okay, so let's talk about the game itself. Because you have to, it was an atrocity. It was an abomination.
I wouldn't know. I only watched the first quarter.
I didn't watch any of it other than the highlights. Yeah. And so, we had guys like, Luka and Jokic couldn't have cared less. None of the players could have cared less. So there are a couple ways that we could theoretically fix this. Jaylen Brown instead incentivize it, pay them for the game. I kind of think that's like paying the guys $500,000 to care when a lot of them are making $40+ million. Like, I don't think it's going to be that big of an impetus to it. And it's also like the analogy for this is the coworker or the worker in an office who it's like, hey, we have a report we need by the end of the day. And it's like 5:01. We need it at 5:15. And they're like, nah, I'm off the clock at 5. And I kind of think that's silly when these guys are.
So you are the king of bad analogies, but, and analogies are also like the language of a lost debate. You, instead of actually discussing, we're discussing, you're like, all right, let me build this analogy. But
now you're making an analogy about the analogy.
No. I'll go back and I'll address your analogy. What happens to that person, the mythical person that you have that says, I'm just leaving at 5 versus the one who stays till 5:15? The one who stays till 5:15 never ends up getting the rewards that they expect. So
it's also the analogy falls apart when these guys are making $40 million compared to someone in an office. And
agreed. That's why the analogy is weird in general. We can just talk about what's actually here, or we can have analogies about food and workplaces.
So next one.
Oh, we didn't even finish with that one.
Okay. Well, you tore that one down.
Okay. All right. Next analogy.
It's not going to work giving them an extra $500,000.
Well, I think that the point is, when you are constructing, at least this is the way that I think it, I don't want it to sound like I've done some research about it, but the way that I think about like building a work environment or building a team atmosphere or building any or encouraging people to developing a culture, frankly, is what you're trying to do. And when you think about that, you would like the positive incentives to be as closely tied to the metrics that you're measuring as possible. In this case, the metric that you care about is viewership, right?
And engagement, and people not being pissed about it.
Right. Well, you can't measure how pissed somebody is or engagement. I think viewership is ultimately. So if you are going to create some sort of incentive, then you tie it to viewership. And then you
lowest, get last two All-Star games, lowest viewership on
earth. That's my point. And then you get out of the way of assuming that you know what knob to turn. You don't know what knob to turn. You know what result that you want. You tie the incentive to the result that you want and then get out of the way. I'm not sure that that will work either, but I think it's the smartest thing you do. The reason why I'm not sure it will work is because we can't change. Again, this is all about culture.
I want to ask you about some ideas to change it before we move on. But do you think I'm irrational if I'm annoyed at the players for how they play in the regular season of the All-Star game? You think I should just be like shaking my fist, being like, damn Adam Silver, damn Dick Pavetta.
Yeah, and damn myself and sports media in general. No, I mean, I get it. I understand why you would have an immediate reaction to like the face of the problem, but they aren't the root of the problem. So obviously I don't expect fans to fully understand all of this, but as someone who steps back and looks at it, it just seems kind of silly to me. So if you want somebody to be mad at you, want to blame LeBron for all of this, by all means
do that.
I'm just saying, I'm not talking to you now, just the general fan who is offended that I said that the players aren't the problem. If you want to blame them, makes you feel better, by all means, pick one of them and blame them. But if you actually want to understand what's actually happening, it's not that all of a sudden this generation of players just were born different. They aren't different. They are the same. The league has made a clear shift to being more profitable and less like about the competitive and the players respond to that.
You don't think that this is the first generation where this has happened, where effort, wanting to play, holding up their half of the bargain and things that aren't directly incentivized to them has become an issue? You don't think any of that is tied to load management, player empowerment? The players get more money, more power. They feel like less.
I think it's all tied together.
On the players.
No, I don't think it's on the players. I think the players are responding to the environment around them. I do think that, yes, the players can be held responsibility. And obviously, as a staunch advocate for unions in general and sports unions in specific, I'm going to speak at a summit tomorrow for the NFLPA. I love the unions, and I do understand that all the things that players have now are because of sacrifices that players made before, and those previous players did not benefit from those sacrifices. So I get the concept of like you carrying this responsibility, but that's inherent in the culture. That's what you have to amplify. That's what you have to celebrate. The NBA has not amplified or celebrated people who were like in it for preserving the culture. Had they done that, then people would grow up with the idea like, dang, this is what's expected of me. You know what the NBA has amplified and celebrated? Winning championships. So like, this doesn't have to be an argument or a disagreement. It seems quite obvious to me that everyone in and around the sport have told us one thing matters above all else. One thing will get you respect. One thing will get you revered. One thing matters. And then the players respond in a way that is consistent with the priorities that were set before them. And then we're like, why don't you guys play hard in the All-Star game? Because no one counts All-Star game MVPs as something worth caring about.
I just think I get that. And all of that is right. The priority has been swung towards this NBA playoffs. You can see it. Like you've said this before. You don't want to watch the regular season compared to the playoffs, different sport. But it's also like, I do think it's like slightly intransigent to think that trying in the All-Star game will drastically increase your probability of injury or lower your chances of winning a title.
I agree. But I think you're looking at it from the negative side and not the positive side. It's about risk reward analysis. You're not gaining anything. And so you may not lose anything, gaining anything.
I want to get there in ideas to
fix. It's not just money. It could also be
PR.
Yeah, PR. And the love and adoration of the fans that you care about. And we don't do it.
I kind of think that fixing the All-Star game, if the players like actually decide to do that, would be really good PR. And I think it's not just the game. Yeah. Because I don't know if the All-Star game specifically is fixable. I have a couple ideas, couple questions.
So maybe complaining helps. Maybe all of us whining about it will make somebody want a white knight in and say, I'll solve it. I'll be the man who fixed the All-Star game. All right, go ahead.
One, would you scrap the game and just give them a week off, do some other events around All-Star weekend?
No.
Okay.
I mean, you need some sort of centerpiece. And I guess you could make the centerpiece something else other than the game, but it's nice to have a thing, like a reason to be there. People want to go to All-Star game. Like, people go to the Super Bowl and have no interest in getting tickets.
Yeah.
Because it's a thing. And I think the NBA needs that one event. It's never going to be the finals because you don't know where it's going to be. It bounces a bunch of different places, not one day.
Would you make it USA versus the world? Because in theory, there could be pride on the line, and the world, if they tried, would demolish the US.
Yeah, I think it could matter. I mean, it gives you something to play for. It reminds me of the cycle that we have in USA basketball generally, where it's like we dominate, then we get a little worse, get a little worse, get a little worse, then we lose to someone we're not supposed to lose to, and then we get back up our best group and dominate, which I guess our best group isn't as good. Well, our best group is still better than everyone else's individual best teams, but together in the NBA, we don't stand a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you reminded me that SGA is Canadian.
Oh, this is a great off-air conversation. I was like, who's going to do it for the US?
Jason Tatum? SGA?
Like, SGA. He's our best American.
He's North American. And that's what I meant, obviously. I'm a continentalist, obviously.
But some of the other events, I think, can be really good, and I think have also fallen by the wayside. So I thought the best part of All-Star Weekend, I didn't watch it live, watched it a replay with Steph versus Serena.
Judge me for grouping all of North America together. It's Black History Month. Y'all do it to Africa all the time.
Don't, there's no y'all in this. I can't believe this is more gaslighting.
One of the things I would argue is they have to be a little bit more nimble. So like the Steph versus Sabrina was good this year, and I think it'd probably be good again next year. But I also think that like Caitlin Clark's coming to the league. Yeah. So like I think the idea of having different challenges where we can showcase different people and different skills and cross promoting it with WNBA players, like I think all of that stuff is interesting and a good thing to think of going forward. I would not get rid of the All-Star game. Like I'd consider 3-on-3, or I consider something. Like, we need something where all the stars are there and participating.
$10 million one-on-one competition, $10 million for the winner.
Yeah, that'd be intense.
Because, by the way, up, it would drastically up the amount of injuries, because I feel like one-on-one is the number one way that people elbowing someone in the face.
Play three dribble, no rebounds. Just like three dribble, one-on-one. Yeah.
But how cool would it be to see like a center playing against a guard, an actual one-on-one? It would be awesome. Dunk contest turned into a G League showcase. Kind of a bummer. I think that it should just be NBA stars, and it should be incentivized for a way, because there is good PR in that.
Yeah.
Like, there's no, I know Zion, John Morant, Anthony Edwards, all of those people would become like create core NBA memories if they dominated the dunk contest. Like, we care more about Eric Gordon and Zach LaVine's dunk contest than any other part of them as players. And now it's just Mac McClung versus Jaylen Brown wearing a glove.
Do you think, that was a bad dunk contest, but the dunk contest, and this again goes to like the competitiveness versus like consumerism or profitability, is like when Blake Griffin jumped over the Kia, I was like, it's over. Yeah. The dunk contest is dead. So I don't know. I don't know if there's a solution to the dunk contest. I think having the top stars in it would be more interesting. But also, like, am I a jerk for saying I've seen all the dunks and I open my Instagram and I see all the dunks every day, and like the dunk contest might just be dead?
If LeBron won it at 40, it would be awesome.
Yeah, but he didn't. He killed the dunk contest, as Stephen A. said.
He's not wrong.
All right, that was fun. Let's get on to someone who knows a lot more about basketball than us. Surprise, Monica McNutt. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic liqueur, Barnstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Swimsuit, check. Sunscreen, check. Phone charger, check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or in a carry-on. And the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HE travel to save 20%.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
As promised, everyone's favorite basketball brain, Monica McNutt, is joining us. Hey, Monica.
Hi, guys. Happy All-Star break over.
Thank you. Now, you weren't here for the early conversation where I was yelling at Charlie for him complaining about the All-Star game. So let's not re-enter that foolishness.
He's mad that I didn't want to see them score 200 points and a half. All right. So,
gaslight.
Guys, the NBA season starts this week. Very exciting. The true beginning of the NBA season. So we're going to do some NBA Mad Libs as we head into the second half and the stretch run. I'm going to give you a sentence. There's going to be a blank. We're all going to fill it in, riff on it a little bit. First one. It is blank that Damian Lillard did not include Giannis in his starting five of NBA players.
Monica, I don't know. Monica might be diplomatic right here. I'm coming with the heat. All right, I'll let you off the hook for a second. You can come back after I say
okay.
Concerning.
Hmm.
That is problematic.
Ominous.
Oh, interesting. Hateful.
I actually was going to go understandable out of Dame.
Hmm.
Honestly, like it's a little crazy. I know. But rattle off the guys, Kravitz, because I looked at this morning and I was like, I kind of get that.
Do you? So the big one is that he put Bam Adebayo at center over Giannis in this.
Monica's a big NBA personality.
Yeah.
She can't be acting crazy like me.
I know.
It's Dame Lillard, Stephen Curry, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, and Bam Adebayo. No, he could have put Jokic in there. I would have been okay. Maybe some Jokic, but we got little Bam Bam. The guy who wanted to get that, Dominique called him little Bam Bam, not me. I'm just repeating it.
I never said that.
But this is a guy who wanted to be traded to the Heat. Did not get along with Adrian Griffin. Seems to be the person who might have been more responsible for his dismissal than Giannis. They brought in Doc that hasn't totally worked with Doc Rivers. The term I used was, it is ignominious.
Oh gosh,
that Damian Lillard did not include Giannis in his starting five of NBA players. I think that this is a reflection that the experiment has not been a happy one in Milwaukee.
So, all right, so let me couch my understandable. I think it's understandable, and I do think it's a little bit of trolling. But when I look at these guys, I am immediately struck by, at least for Bam, I don't think Bam gets enough credit in the league, personally, for his versatility, particularly on defense. Offensively, the versatility kind of ebbs and flows a little bit, right? And so if it's just Bam versus Giannis, it could be a little bit of that, Kravitz, in terms of a guy who he thinks he may fit with a little bit better. But like, I wasn't about to make this a huge thing. Like, he obviously went with guys that are lethal shooters, scorers. Even if you just want to go to this list being guys that have the ability to shoot the basketball. Bam can shoot the basketball better than Giannis.
Yeah, that's fair. But I mean, I like to troll for, I mean, they've underachieved so far this season. They moved over the coach, and they are not the title contenders that we all thought when they first got over there. And I think the point that Charlie pointed out is that we heard all summer that Dame wants to go to Miami.
Yep.
He wants to go to Miami. And then the place that he ends up, he then calls for the center at the position of the player that he was drawn to. I don't know. It was probably a mistake. Yeah, it made nothing. It wasn't like
it's
not like Dame is a rapper or anything and understands the importance of words.
The funniest outcome of this would have been if he had been like myself, Duncan Robinson, Caleb Martin, Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, left off Tyler Hero. You can trade him for me. That's okay. The rest of the Heat players, though.
They're going to be all right. They're going to struggle. They're doing better than Georgetown, which is nice.
Oh, wow. Why did we have to catch that? Okay.
No, right, y'all better than DePaul. You could. That's it.
Thanks. Yeah, that's not great. But yeah, I'll take it.
So, Monica, no level of concern with the Bucks. Obviously, they have a good record, but when you turn on and watch that team a little bit, it looks clunky. It doesn't look great at times. We thought that pick and roll was going to be unstoppable from the jump.
Yeah, there's a level of concern, but I think... All right, let's look at the East, right? And for as competitive as it is, the Bucks are, I am not concerned that they will fall outside of the top five. Mm-hmm. Five being the basement in my mind. I think there are some things that they will figure out. I think to a degree, while we are all right to jump up and down on the absence of Drew Holiday, their point of attack defense, Grayson Allen, whoever you want to attribute to no longer being there, I do think that to a degree, defense is just effort, and they just have not put forth the effort. And now, as you started this conversation, at least when I joined Kravitz, the NBA season just got going. Like, you do have some veterans that know how to turn it on, so to speak. Now, I am also one that cautions everybody about this on-off switch because I don't think it's as easy to flip on as you think. But I think there's enough runway for them to find what this version of the Bucks defense looks like. And frankly, the offense is still high caliber when it wants to be.
Yeah, I think you're right. We can all withhold judgment and for a couple more months. But to your point, there's no switch when they get to the playoffs. I think the habits that they ingrain in the next couple of months are the ones that they're going to carry into the playoffs. If we don't see like some defensive improvement between now and then we don't have to respect them as a real contender.
And I kind of just thought that the offense would be easier too, because like you're having a peak Giannis season and we don't know how many of these where he'll be this good and this dominant on both ends they're going to be left. And you think with adding someone like Damian Lillard that they should just be pretty much unstoppable in the half court. So, that was sort of the same thing.
I'm going to jump in though, Kravitz, because I think, yes, in theory, we all thought that.
Yes.
But both of these guys, I'm about to mess up exact numbers of years and age, but Dame's been in the league at least a dozen years. Giannis is pushing 10 if it is not already 10. They have been the centerpiece the entire existence of their NBA career to date. And so, yes, in theory, just share the basketball, run the pick and roll, wah, wah, wah. There is so much more that goes into that. Like, and I keep going back to how much of an anomaly Kawhi Leonard 2019 Raptors was in terms of add star, add water, add championship. It doesn't happen.
That's a really good point. I have no rebuttal because it does seem like it takes 2 years usually for these stars to mesh a certain way. All right, next one. And in this one, we need to assume that the standings more or less hold pat and one of the Thunder or T-Wolves or a one seed or two seed, they're both the one and the two. So blank team is in the play-in in the West, and that's the team that the young top seed, either the Thunder or the T-Wolves, will not want to play.
It's the Lakers.
Yeah.
It's the Lakers. And I don't even think it is a mental do not want to play, because I actually think both of the top two teams are like, let's go, let's get it. I think that if the Lakers put it together, their size can match up with either one of those two teams is a little bit more problematic for the Thunder than it is the T-Wolves. So just schematically, those matchups are the problem.
Yeah, I definitely would agree that it's the Lakers. I mean, the other option is the Warriors, right?
The Warriors, the Mavericks could end up in there. The Sacramento Kings, who have some playoff medal now, and even the Pelicans could drop into the play-in. It's distinctly possible.
I mean, I guess maybe the Kings' medal has changed, but we had a Sabonis playoff problem last year that I don't imagine is going to go away. So I don't think that the size on the Warriors, on the Wolves or OKC is concerned about Sabonis, because that seemed like that was the big killer for that team. It was like they didn't have any internal presence. So, yeah, I mean, I'd go with LeBron and AD, because AD is as good as anybody in the NBA when he's playing at that level. And we saw that he would black out for a series at a time last year. And you don't need him for a whole series in a play-in. So I think the obvious answer is the Lakers. And then there's LeBron, who also, I know we don't believe in hitting switches around here, but when you get to 40, 39, 40 years old, all you can do is hit switches. And LeBron showed that he can at least, like we saw during the play-in tournament, he hit a defensive switch. Like, oh, who's this guy playing defense
mid-season? The in-season tournament, Foxy, the in-season tournament.
Yeah, which is only a few months ago. So I think that he can hit the switch again in the playoffs.
Although I will say about LeBron switching, hitting switches, if anybody gets the credit to do so, he's of that tier of guy. However, as the team took a nosedive after their in-season championship, I don't know if the switch is going to stay on as bright as it once did. It might just be slide. You know them switches in the house that need the electrician that kind of slide in the middle? You got a dimmer by accident? That's what we got going on.
I'm going to cheat for a second. It's my game. I'm cheating. If the Thunder are the ones who play the Lakers are the answer there. The size and force that the Lakers can play with and the size inside, that could actually, to me, be like a rebounding and size mismatch of this huge team. Of course, the Lakers don't guard wings that well, and SGA might go crazy. We'll see on that. But if it is...
SGA and Jalen Williams, but continue.
And Jalen Williams, I mean, that team is loaded. Their top four is awesome. If it's the Wolves in this situation, I think
what you're doing here.
I think they should be more scared of the Warriors. We've seen the Warriors. There's been so much about Rudy Gobert being played off the floor in the postseason, and he's been so much better playing in switches this season. His defense has been unbelievable. That team has been so tough. But that is a singular matchup. Getting Rudy Gobert in that 4-on-3 after the Draymond Steph pick and roll is his nightmare. And it's been his nightmare for a long time. And I think if that is the matchup, it's a little bit scary for the Timberwolves.
I don't have the T-Wolves roster in front of me. I think there's a little more depth there than you're giving them credit for. Mm-hmm. But we do need to give the respect deserved to the Warriors.
And the Warriors are getting better. We did. If you had said a month ago that Jonathan Kuminga was going to emerge this way, I think that would have drastically changed what we thought about the team. But yeah, you know, they have Jaden McDaniels. They have Anthony Edwards, who, if he wants to, can be an all-world defender. They're much deeper than I was giving them credit for in my cheating of my own game.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're in the play-in, you're probably going to get knocked out either way. But I get your point. I'm not all that worried about either of these teams, honestly. More the Lakers than the Warriors, because the Warriors are still learning and changing. Mm-hmm. The Lakers feel like they're pretty much the same team from last year that got to the finals, even though there were some fluky things that took place.
Conference finals.
Yeah, the conference finals.
Went through the exact team like this. Went through Memphis, who was a young team, who was the 2 seed.
I think that's a good call out, Foxy, but how many iterations do we think exist of the Warriors, right? Like, I'm not sure that they haven't approached their ceiling outside of Steph continuing to be insane. What did he hit? Like, 33s over a stretch of 4 games or whatever the crazy number was. I probably didn't even do it justice. And shooting high 50s from three-point range, like, is that sustainable from Steph? Like, sign me up for my, I got the popcorn, buckle my seatbelt. I'd love to see it. But I'm just not sure how many more iterations of the Warriors there are to come. Whereas I think the Lakers hit their stride and are playing consistent ball just by virtue of the size that they have.
Yeah.
To me, they could be real problematic.
All right, next one. Blank is the team that's going to, this happens every year, by the way. Blank is the team that's going to stack up a ton of regular season wins, but we won't actually believe in heading into the postseason.
Seems obviously to me that it's the Wolves, but I mean, I think that this version of Wolves is one worth believing in. However, they still have the Gobert issue that we haven't seen tested in like game plan mode, right? Let me be quiet. There's somebody here who really knows basketball better than me, so let me hear what Monica has to say.
Well, I will say, Foxy, I, unlike many of my colleagues, I think I said this to you last time I pulled up on you. I'm actually in on the Wolves.
Yeah.
So like, yep. I understand the logic on that. I think that there is a mental component to that team that is just untested, a little immature. Like, I know folks have brought up Finch's track record in the postseason that's not really been meddled or not been tested yet. So I get it on the Wolves, but I'm kind of in on the Wolves. I actually think it would be Dallas. I mean, Luka is incredible. He and Kyrie together are incredible, but it just feels a little wonky after that. And they will get all the credit just because of the two of them. But I think it's more to the story.
So my answer for this is the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Mm-hmm. I get that.
I think that they've won like 18 of 20, something ridiculous. They're in the 2 seed in the East. I don't think of them as a real contender against the Celtics in the Eastern Conference. I think they have an actual issue that, we didn't think that the team would get better when they lost Mobley and Garland. And that is sort of what's happened. And they have something to figure out of how are all four of their best players going to play and compete together. All right, last one, guys. Blank team is this year's Miami Heat.
Okay, I think this is cute and all, but nobody like that. This doesn't happen. Like, I need people to understand Heat culture, reverence, respect, all due. But it doesn't happen. I don't even think Miami Heat this year are Miami's Heat team of last year. Like, no. Last year was such a... Do you guys remember they lost their first play-in game last year?
It's DeMar DeRozan didn't bring his daughter the second game, or they would have been... The Bulls were knocked them out. Right?
Golly, like, nothing that happened last year should have happened. And in all respect to what the Heat were able to accomplish, but like... No, nobody is them this year.
One thing happened that should happen. They got blown out in the finals.
Oh, there's that.
That definitely should have happened. I mean, the run that they went, this is, so Charlie's going to get mad at me, but I'm going to draw it all the way back to the first conversation that we had at the beginning of the show. Nobody celebrates them for what they did last year. That's like the, because they did get a ring. Rings. That was incredible.
That's crazy. People's perception of Jimmy Butler has totally changed from these playoff runs.
From these playoff runs.
Yeah, and like Jimmy, Lazic,
playoff
he's a hero.
Jimmy is the only one we acknowledge, though.
Yeah, he's the only one we acknowledge.
Did you say the emergence of hero?
No, he said Jimmy Butler is a hero. He did not say the emergence of Tyler Hero. Like, one R, not twos. I mean, my point is Jimmy Butler is not in the conversation with the guys in the league, but what he did last year was as impressive. If you were going to think of things that were impressive in NBA playoffs over the past 10 to 15 years, the run that this team went on was as impressive as just about anything we've seen.
Absolutely. Now, let me just tie this into, I know, a conversation that you guys had earlier in the podcast. Speaking of one, Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler makes no qualms about and does not try to fake it. The regular season don't matter. He could give two about All-Star. And you say playoff Jimmy, that's the only Jimmy we seem to recognize. And so you talk about a guy that is all in on everything that some folks may argue may be wrong with the NBA. I don't think it's wrong personally. But I do think that what they did last year, to your point, Foxy, should be celebrated, reverenced. But don't ever, anybody, nobody in their right mind should get accustomed to having that type of run.
I love it. I don't want to have Monica on. All right.
Can I get my answer?
Give your answer.
The 2024 Miami Heat are this year's version of the 2023 Miami Heat. I know they're the 5 seed. They are, along with the New York Knicks, who are also a very impressive story and a tough team who I think no one wants to play in the playoffs. The Miami Heat are the biggest competition to the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference.
Gross.
1 out of 10? I'd sit for that. There is something mental there in that matchup. I actually would sit for that.
And playoff Jimmy.
it sounded a lot smarter when Monica agreed with it than when you said it off the top. Anyway, thank you, Monica.
I don't think they're them. Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for being here. Do it again sometimes when you find some time and your very busy schedule for us lowly old friends from an old defunct show.
It's basketball time now, so I'll make room.
All right. Woo. Love it. See you, bud.
Bye, guys.
Thank you, Monica McNutt, for joining us. And, of course, thank you to The Snack for producing and hosting this show. And thank you to all the other great producers, Seraphine and Megan, Kevin, and Brian. We're out. Oh, yeah, Cortez. Ugh.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.